So I've got Kathy Voiles and I've got Sebastian Cassie in the studio. Have I pronounced that correctly? Turn your microphone on. That'd be a start, wouldn't it? It's all professional up here. Yeah. Have I pronounced your name?
Yeah, that's
right?
Fine. That's great. Sebastian. Yeah. Yep.
Sebastian and Kathy here to tell us, because I was under the, and I'm sure I'm not the only person on the island that thought that the Save Kennedy Point thing was done and dusted and that was it. And...
It's not over.
Great. What's happening?
Kia ora, John. Kia ora. We have been deliberating and debating and seeking expert advice for quite a few months now. And we have, as you would have read in the papers, those who read the Gulf News, perhaps those who listen to Radio New Zealand, plans are afoot. You know, we're back in the court. Sebastian will talk to you about that. And we have new evidence. And hopefully we cannot allow ourselves to stand by and watch our little bay be desecrated.
Mm. Yeah, look, I don't think a fight for standing up for the environment is ever over.
Mm.
I don't think trying to uplift the mana of Mana Whenua of Waiheke Island should ever be a fight that stops, because it's just so important. And it's very easy when there are short-term losses to become demoralised and feel battered and bruised. Mm. But I think the amazing gift and opportunity in that is also to regroup and to understand that what you are doing has a much more important long-term objective. And if it weren't us who were standing up and speaking for the voiceless, then their voices would go unheard, and the real risk of Waiheke Island and its beautiful natural environment becoming further desecrated no longer becomes a risk, it becomes a reality.
Mm.
And so, you know, I always find it surprising when people say, we thought it was over, because what does that mean? Does that mean we just roll over and accept that our beaches and our wildlife should be put in jeopardy? And we also had to listen to our community and understand what their feelings were post the judgment. And they all felt initially deflated and disappointed. But when you know that you're standing up for the right thing, they also felt an incredible sense of pride and achievement in getting it that far.
Mm.
And we got a mandate from them to go and look and research if there was any other way we could put our foot in the door to perhaps overturn what they see as an injustice.
You know, when I read about the last court appearance, the press, and I don't know where I read this, but it did seem quite damning. And I'm curious to know, was that just press bias? What was the upshot of that? Was it, you know, it seemed, and that's why I assumed that it was over, that they basically rubber stamped it and said, no, this is definitely happening. So what had actually happened there?
From my perspective, I think we live in a world today where, you know, the press are forced to sensationalize things and to try and interpret things in a way that perhaps seem more extreme and one-sided than they are. The reality of what happened is, as we sat in a courtroom with experts on one side saying that this development is completely inappropriate for Waiheke Island and the greater Auckland and New Zealand region, it poses a real risk and threat to wildlife, to ecology, to the environment, and to the cultural way of life that Waiheke Island has. And on the other side, we had experts saying the opposite. The judge then had to make a call. He had to make a call on each of those as to which he or they preferred. And so, but, you know, it's, I think, trite to say it's the journey that sometimes gets lost when people only report on the end determination. It's not like we rocked up to court without any experts, without any evidence. We had really strong people with who are experts in their field who said, no, what you are doing in fighting this marina is right, and it's right for these reasons, and let us stand with you and say that. And so, you know, the press, they don't report on the journey and on those very important processes. What they report on in a sensationalist way is the outcome.
Yeah.
And that's why I think we felt so deflated, because there wasn't anyone telling our side of the story, and anyone saying that, hold on, this group of people who represent a large part of Waiheke Island, they're there not for monetary gain and not for anything of self-benefit. So there must be something more to this, you know, or we're all just crazy, and we probably are to a certain extent.
Well, I think that a lot of the stories that were told on the last day in court were extremely strong, but whether you can take those emotions and those sense of story and place and life histories of forever, you know, going to that little bay, swimming there, fishing, eating oysters, those perhaps are not legally arguments or considered as such, but they are extremely important. And the courtroom was full of supporters against the marina every single day.
So do you think there'll be one thing that I am curious to know is, if that would have gone ahead, if that had have been rubber stamped and this was it and there was no appeal, which is, I guess, what we're talking about here. When was their deadline? When were they going to start building that marina? Do you know?
This is the, I guess, remarkable thing about these type of resource consents. They go in and they apply for some of the most intrusive and large-scale developments on land which they do not own, which is public space land. And they do it on plans which are so scant and so lacking of detail and specificity. It would be like you saying to council, I'm going to build a house on this land, but I'll tell you later what it's going to look like. I'll tell you later if it's going to be one story or two story. For now, just agree that I can build my house and I'll get started, and I promise it won't have any effects.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the amazing thing about this. We can't tell you when it was supposed to start, because up until the end of the court case, there were no finalized plans. A press release was put out by the developer, Tony Mayer, and his company a month and a half after the court case to say, oh, just to update you, we're still finalizing plans.
Really?
Yeah. We're thinking we're going to change a few how some of the buildings looks. We're going to change, you know, the composition of berths and how many there might be. So it's remarkable that a development that is this intrusive, that is this colossal in scale, and that has this potential impact on our public space, on our way of life, can get approval and be rubber stamped without the type of plans you would need if you were simply putting up an extra fence at your house or a balcony.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that I'm actually in the process of renovating, and I completely concur with this. So every slight change we make, changing from an environmental type of insulation, we have to go back and get more consents. Yeah. I mean, and we've been working on a small renovation for 2 years.
Oh, I'm in the middle of consents too, and it's, you know, it annoys me that someone can just waltz in, and I'm going to make an alleged quote that it's as easy, so easy a child could do it.
Yes,
that you could put in, this marina, and that your paperwork is so easy that a child, better not, and that it's so easy, and yet, if I have to do it, I've got to jump through hoops. You've got to jump through hoops. You'd have to jump through. Why is this guy so special? What's the what's with this?
Not only would you have to jump hoops, but it's your land, you know, and that's the difference. Whereas this development is proposed to go on a piece of seabed and foreshore that is owned first and foremost by Mana Whenua.
Mm.
Secondly, by the community and the citizens of Waiheke Island. So the fact that they can do this without being held to the same level of standard and requirement is unbelievable. And we have to sit in a state of uncertainty until he finally reveals, oh, here it is, my final plan.
Mm.
And who knows what that might look like.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't really have a right of recourse. It took them, the better part of 6 months to get this type of approval on notice, that very short notice to the community over a Christmas period. So we didn't really even have proper time to consider it and to come back with real considered points against the design, which, it, as you understand now, isn't really a design at all, but a concept.
Mm.
So that's part of the anger and the unjust that people feel. And what has made this next step possible is it's now come to light that some of the information that the developer put to the court may in fact be completely wrong.
There's an arrogance there, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that the correct word here, arrogance?
I tend to think you're absolutely right. But I know that, we all look at the world in a different way.
Oh, that's true.
And when we live here and we walk that road down, Donald Booth Road, down to Kennedy Point, and we sit under the Pohutukawa and we, just go and stand in that water, it's very different for someone else thinking, oh yes, 180 boats, a lot of construction, therefore a lot of destruction. Mm. It's really caretaking for the future that I think on Waiheke particularly, and everywhere in New Zealand, everywhere in Aotearoa.
And as well, I prefer to think of it as just this grotesque sense of entitlement, that they are entitled to simply put a stake in the ground and say, this is ours now.
Mm.
And to think that, to not think of the wildlife that occupy that space as being creatures of value who need to be protected, who have homes that if we disturb, who knows where they can go to. I also think that when you say to the community, oh, we're going to put sewage tanks into the seabed.
Mm.
Like, the whole thought of these things is just so grotesquely entitled that I think we have to be the people who stand up and say, no, not here, not anywhere. It's not a NIMBY type of attitude. It's simply to say that our Indigenous people, for example, have fought too long and hard for recognition of spaces that are important to them. And now you say, oh, but it's okay for us to put our poo in under your seabed, despite the fact that you fought so long and hard for it.
And they'll never leak. Oh, they'll never break those tanks, will they? Because I'll tell you what, last Christmas, my Christmas was ruined last year, right? Because I've been swimming, let alone a rower, hundreds of times, never got sick. Mysteriously, I got really sick at the same time that there's hundreds of boats. You don't know that what these people are doing with the sewage.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, but we've got storage tanks in the ground. Yeah, you might, but not everyone's going to do that. You know, and so for every 100 boats you might have, well, what if 20 don't follow the rules?
Mm-hmm.
And people like me have my trifle. I make a trifle every year for Christmas. That trifle, no one ate it. It was really for me. I look forward to that trifle. That was my thing, and I couldn't eat it because some selfish boat owner had decided to evacuate their cistern into our lovely bay, and that's probably going to happen there too.
Well, we certainly need legislation about emptying septic tanks out 500 metres because it's just, it's ridiculous.
It's an outrage.
It is, but I mean, and people may argue that this would have provided, a marina will provide pump out stations, but I do not see 150 boats going around the island to pump out. We really need to look at that seriously in New Zealand. That's another thing to do.
But yeah, absolutely. There's so much, a case like this highlights, there's so much deficiencies in the system. And there are people like Tony Mair and their development company who are taking advantage of that while they can. And they're the ones who come in and let's quickly get in and let's lock this down for 35 years. 35 years. And they don't pay a cent to occupy that space. You know, it's really, really concerning. And this is why I think we've had to say to ourselves, although we are tired, we need to make a stand today to ensure that there is something around tomorrow for our children, for our future generations, for our penguins, for our dolphins. I mean, almost in something that's cruel poetry, a week after the judgment came out, there were dolphins swimming in the shallows of Kennedy Point Bay, and you know, people took photos of it and put it on social media. And you think about, where do they go? And what a lost opportunity to think that we can no longer stand on that shallow shore and see these majestic creatures. You know, that for me is such a sad reality that something like a marina like this poses.
Well, look, we're running out of time here. I've only got 3 minutes of the show left. But just one other thing, one other point perhaps I'd like to just run by you. Have they, like, factored in the road? There's only one road in to that. It is one of our main roads anyway, because of the fact that it's where the ferry comes, the car ferry.
Four schools.
There's a school on that. Yeah,
four schools, yeah. Actually.
And a kindergarten.
That's right.
Yeah. Factored that in?
Well, I did listen to the AT expert on day one of court, and my feeling was no.
Yeah, I think
not at all.
For us, there's so many things that they either didn't take into account properly, or that they said they have taken into account, but in a way seem to have misled or misrepresented things to the court. And one of the biggest things for us is the view of Mana Whenua, which is Ngāti Pāua, which is, you know, over the past few months we've looked into this issue. And whilst the developer has said that Ngāti Pāua were in support of this marina application, it's now been discovered that the mandated representative for Ngāti Pāua was never consulted. And that they've come out and said,
is that right?
You have offended our mana by saying that we support this marina.